The Guardian.
Why, howdy. Welcome to Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. My name is Paul McInnes, and I will say this only once. Remember this song? Oh, 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 there's panic in America. We're sure you do. That's America by Razorlight, and we'll be talking to Andy Burrows of the band about its disputed origins and his charity solo album too. That's a bit later on. We'll also be reviewing new music from Stephen Malkmus, Does It Offend You Yet, and Lil Wayne. And we'll be surveying the wreckage of the Battle of the Blog, whose critical reputation was left intact. Find out later on. But first, this week's guests. That was Two Doors Down by the Mystery Jets, and they are our guest this week. Rosie Swash, who is the girl who lives three doors down and reckons the girl who lives two doors down is right old full of herself, joins me here. Hello, Rosie.
Hello, Paul.
How is life three doors down?
It's all right, although I am trying to move, but that's nothing to do with the girl next door.
No, indeed, indeed. You are currently, though, in the arms of London's estate agents, which must be a very pleasurable experience for you.
As you've noticed.
Yes, indeed. Can't come in this morning. I've got some tying me around a hovel in Shoreditch. Anyway, let's move on to our guests, yes. The Mystery Jets. Yes. Now, their album came out, what, about 6 weeks, maybe even 2 months ago. So we're not doing the usual thing of interviewing them around the release of a product. And this is because we've been giving this album a bit of a spin, and you know what? It's grown on us, has it not?
It has. I think it's grown on me slightly more. I would say that I've slowly fallen in love with it. I think it's a delightful, charming little album. It's a little bit of a change in direction for them. It was produced by Errol Alkan. I have to say, I was not really that excited about their comeback because I wasn't into them first time round, but I really, really like it.
I remember when we reviewed one of their singles on the pod a few weeks ago, that there was a bit of negative feedback on the blog from people saying that, you know, that they've got their dad in the band and they're a little bit staid and stuff. But this is all, well, particularly in the dad area, things have changed, no?
Yeah, they talk about that a little bit in the interview. I think they, you know, some people think it was a gimmick of theirs, but actually they're really upbeat and confident and very excited about the new album, which they're touring at the moment, which is the first thing they talked about, was filled me in on the misfortune that had befallen their tour manager.
He's had the craziest week. His football team have lost two trophies, and then in Paris he lost his mobile phone, and then in Nottingham he hadn't eaten for like 2 days, and
he's
like,
"This is great.
I'm just gonna go to the burger
I'm
shop
gonna go and find the greasiest burger I can possibly get my hands on."
And then it just, as soon as he's about to put a bite in his mouth, like, this guy just came from the skies and fell down at him.
A guy?
Some dude just came and fell on top of him.
And it just fell out of the sky onto his
onto his burger
and,
as
like,
well.
Squished his, and his burger just fell on the ground, and he hadn't eaten for like 2 days.
Well, so things aren't going great for your tour manager, but I would say that things are generally going quite well for you in terms of how the album's been received. What I thought when I was listening to it was, it reminded me of The Smiths, and your voice reminds me of Jeff Buckley in it. Sort of the total opposite of Fizzy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think we're just trying to make exciting pop music, really. We don't want to feel like we have to sort of sand down the edges in order to be popular or anything like that. We just want to make slightly off-kilter music popular. Obviously, there is a line where you do have to kind of simplify your ideas to a certain extent so you're not kind of firing over people's heads. But I think at the same time, we don't ever want to, like, feel like we can't totally express our ideas. Hmm. And you can do that in 3.5 minutes.
Yeah, I think we've learned to do that in a more kind of focused way.
Yeah. It used to take us like 12 and a half minutes to do it in
a
song.
And like, you know, 2 years to write a song.
Yeah. I think from listening to a lot of pop music as well over the last like year and a half as well, we've found our feet more in terms of what kind of band we want to be. But I'm always too shy to work with courage up. I hear that she likes to dance around the room. Do you wanna swell in a shoe market mode? Maybe I should say what's up.
Yeah.
Some people call us an 80s revival band, and some people call us fizzy pop. And
we were prog pirates, apparently.
and like
now we're
prog
80s
daddy ditches.
Daddy ditching.
Well, because you mentioned earlier listening to more recent music, because people always think that influences have to come from 20 years back or something like that. But I noticed on your Behind the Bunhouse blog that you really like to talk about people that you like right now. I went to this gig, this person's amazing. Yeah. You don't usually get that kind of camaraderie with bands. Is that an accurate reflection of how you feel about your peers?
I think when we go on tour, we do always try to, you know, use it as a way to bring someone new into the limelight, you know, because we've always been very fortunate in that sense. We were kind of introduced to playing live by bands who believed in us, and it wasn't necessarily because we were the next big thing or the hyped up band. They were just bands that felt we were doing something interesting musically. And I think whenever we go on tour, we do try to think, okay, who can we take out there, who people expecting the least? And I think often you see the big bands taking out quite safe supports on tour, but all bands who aren't going to necessarily outshine them.
Yeah.
But I think we quite like the idea of bringing out a band who kind of keep us on our toes.
Yeah, put us to the test. We once tried to put Vicks Vapor Rub.
And in private places.
But I mean, it definitely...
You to tell me that.
Just
it was trying to give us a kick up the arse and try.
We didn't have a good support band.
Trying to put life back into the set.
Yeah.
And, it wasn't powerful enough, so we moved on to Deep Heat.
You mentioned there that people have called you Daddy Ditches.
Yeah.
Did your dad leave the band because he's not into the Deep Heat?
He's all about the Deep Heat.
That was definitely one of the reasons. Yeah. He didn't leave the band. He's still in the band, and he is still very much a creative member of the band. You know, we're always writing together, but at the start it seemed like it was one of the things which got people excited about us. By the end it seemed like it was our gimmick. You know, our music had become second to this gimmick, and it was really frustrating, even for him. If I only knew your name, I'd go from door to door.
The album's called 21, but there aren't 21 songs.
No.
On it. Is that because...
21 is the name of the secret song on the album, and so the record... It just seemed appropriate to name the record after that. It's not really the title track of the album or anything like that. I don't know. It seems to me like a lot of the different meanings in all the songs collectively on the album sort of are embodied in that title. I don't know why.
It's kind of like the age where you grow up. Like.
Yeah, and their songs about having your heart broken and losing people who are close to you and falling in love and all these kind of things which seem very much a part of your life when you're that age, you know, which we are.
And how did you come to be working with Errol Alkan? Is it because he did the Umbrella Head chat with you, or was that... And then from there you thought, maybe there's an album
here. He was kind of always into us from the start, and I don't think it was ever even a intention to like get into producing or anything, but it just happened. And one day he said, look, do you want to try going to the studio together? And initially it was to make some B-sides, and they came out so well that we just thought we'd hold them back. And I've read a few interviews with him recently. He's already saying that's it, he's made his three records in the space of a year and he doesn't want to produce anymore, which is
a bit of a shame,
pretty,
really.
It's pretty nuts.
But you're all right.
Pretty short career.
Who are we going to do our third album with?
We were very lucky with making our first record with James Ford and the second one with Errol, that they've both...
Kind of new, weren't they? It's fresh blood.
Yeah, and neither of them really have a particular sound that they impose on bands. You know, they really like... They bring out the best in you. We've had remixes back in the past where it just sounds like someone's already had a tune and they've chucked our vocal on top of it.
Yeah,
and
charged us
$20,000. Mate, not interested.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, the first thing Errol did for us was a remix of a song called Zoo Time, which was on our first album. And I remember taking it to one mixing studio and he couldn't get the right, you know, level of compression on a hi-hat or a snare or something. So he took it to another mixing studio and they didn't have the right console. He wanted a very particular, like, old 70s valve. Something or other, and he wasn't doing it as a job, he was just doing it out of the pure love of wanting to make the best piece of work he possibly could.
Yeah,
and you know, he applies that to everything he does, so he's brilliant.
That was the Mystery Jets. The single Two Doors Down is out on June the 2nd. The album 21 is out now, and they're playing that Forest Tour thingamajiggum with the Zootons over the next month too. Now, I turn to my right, and who do I see? Why, forsooth, gadzooks, it's Dorian Linsky.
Hello.
Hello there, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I don't know quite why I went all medieval on your ass there. It just seemed appropriate for the occasion. But you are here because we're about to go and review some music together. Heidley ho, let's all gather our hands and romp through the fields in May and listen to a bit of Does It Offend You? Yay. That is Does It Offend You? Yeah. Or yeah. Or yeah. And Epic Last Song. DIOYY question mark, which I will be referring to them as in future, have four members, only one of whose names is transparently made up. See if you can guess which. James Rushent, Rob Bloomfield, Dan Coop and Morgan Quaintance. Their name is apparently a quote from David Brent of The Office, though the full line, Does It Offend You? Yeah, My Drinking would surely have been a better name for the band. Sometimes described as new rave, sometimes as electro indie, sometimes as poppy hardcore, their debut album, the equally snappily titled You Have No Idea What You're Getting Yourself Into, is available now. Rosie, Swash,
yes.
Are we doing Does It Offend You? Yeah, a little bit late in their lifespan?
Well, I think that's a bit cruel.
Well, potentially
they're
cruel.
Over.
Well, that might be a potential implication.
They're going to be all over the festivals this summer.
Are they?
Yeah.
All right, fine. Okay, so we're doing them right, just at the right time. Crest of a wave.
I like Does It Offend You, yeah. I think there's a lovable idiocy to them. This song is not like the rest of their album. The rest of their stuff either has this sort of very nerdish computer nerd quality to it or this real faux aggression. This is just a sort of lovely pop melody and it's a love song and it's not what you'd expect. I like the fact it's called Epic Last Song and it is the last song on the album, of course.
Is it just all a little bit too self-regarding and knowing when you actually compare what they say about themselves to the actual music they make, Dorian?
What do they say about themselves?
Well, there's all this self-regarding, you know, this is an epic last song, little nudge, nudge, wink, wink, does it offend you? Yeah, another wink. But then what they make here particularly seems to be quite straightforward down the line.
Well, I quite like the joke, particularly because this reminds me, sonically reminds me of Block Party.
Mm.
You know, and that is a self-regarding, pompous, humourless bunch. So I quite like the sense of humour, but I fear that I was actually rather too kind to them when I reviewed the album in the paper. Because I think the name and everything they say sets them up to be so dreadful that just by not being dreadful, I mistook them for good. Whereas in fact, they're just not dreadful. This is a pretty kind of average tune. There's nothing special about it. I quite like the, on the album, the sort of mad, trashy, crampsy B-movie stuff. And I just think, if you're going to arm yourself with a name that stupid, you might as well make just really mad, stupid music. You just want more sparks to fly, and I think it sounds a lot more conservative than they imagine it does. Mm. It's not that mad or weird.
Does that stop you from appreciating their music properly? Do you think the oddness, Rosie?
Well, the lack of oddness, as Dorian would say. I quite enjoyed seeing them live. I find this CD a bit boring, is the truth. But still, there's something to them. I mean, I think this sounds like a Klaxons album track. I don't think you could even identify that this was Does It Offend You? Yeah, if you just listened to it and didn't know who it was, which probably says quite a lot about the band.
Well, that is Epic Last Song, as discussed, by DIOYY question mark, and it's out on June the 2nd. Second track on Singles Club is Gardenia by Stephen Malkmus and the Jicks. So you got some curb appeal, or can you cook a three-course meal, or are you just a present waiting to be opened up and parceled out of? Gardenia, dressed in the campaign journal, in the rucksack of an Afrikaner, candidate for my reform. That's Stephen Malkmus and the Chicks with Gardenia. Stephen Malkmus was the lead singer with difficult to underestimate their importance to the indie fraternity band Pavement, who ruled the alternative roost in the 90s. He has a trademark jangly guitar sound that is commonly held to be attributable to his use of a single coil pickup on his Fender Stratocaster. A gardenia, meanwhile, is an evergreen shrub native to Africa. Their strong scent can trigger headaches, asthma, or other reactions in sensitive individuals. Dorian, I'm not for a moment suggesting you're sensitive, but what reaction does this trigger in you?
Lethargy. He just doesn't really sound as if he's trying anymore. Pavement, and in particular the first two Pavement albums, were so daring and strange and influential and intelligent that even within Pavement's lifespan, they were kind of, you know, they were still producing good songs, but they were struggling to match that impact. Mm-hmm. And this just sounds to me like sort of indie-flavoured Rusk. It's middle-aged sing-along, and even the sort of quirky bits, like there's a bit where he sort of riffs on the name of Richard Avedon. It sounds like somebody trying to do a Pavement song would do. It's just like, oh, let's just sort of drop in some cool name that nobody else would, you know, would think of.
So just for people who aren't as familiar with Pavement, what in particular was it they became renowned for?
They just managed to get away with a really strange, cerebral, impish sense of humour and odd sort of jagged sounds and unusual structures. But at the same time, it sounded just so accessible.
I agree with Dorian. This sounds like someone sort of doing a Pavement track. It's those kind of 60s... It's actually quite grating because it doesn't feel like there's very much imagination behind it.
But if that's his natural way of making music, is that not fair enough? Is he not entitled to sound like he's trying to make a Pavement song?
Well, the problem is lyrically he's trying to do a Pavement. Musically, he's not. So musically, you just get this kind of bland, will this do, real lowest common denominator sort of American indie rock. He's not taking the risks he did with Pavement. Mm-hmm. And so all you get is that slightly off-putting, slightly smug lyrical tone.
He may have gone into semi-retirement and be talking about the freeway and pressed flowers in old books, but it sounds like he's individually is content with that. Does that not have some value in it? To hear something, it sounds like an offcut from the Juno soundtrack to me.
They weren't a miserable band.
Well, it's just, yeah, but there's lots of American indie that has this kind of slightly, you know, sort of collegey, sunny, sort of quirky, good vibes to it. It's a kind of default setting, you know, not to knock the Juno soundtrack, but it's interesting that that's become enormously popular, pushing into the mainstream this strand of 60s referencing quirky whimsy that's been part of American indie for like 15, 20 years. So, yeah, I'm really glad he's happy, but this does not make me happy.
No, exactly. That's what it's... I don't like this type of music at all. It's never really spoken to me. I once bought a 7-inch of Pavement because I thought that's what I was supposed to be doing. But listening to this, it puts a smile on my face, and I think that to be able to communicate that has a value to me. Anyway, we shall move on, because Gardenia by Stephen Malkmus and the Jicks is also out on June the 2nd. In fact, everything we're reviewing this week is. Final track on Singles Club is Lollipop by Lil Wayne. She's so sophisticated, cause her brain is off the chain, and then my diamonds are in the choir because they sang from off my chain, and my Nina just joined the game because all she do is bang. Like Ricky Martin, Wayne, and Kanye, pick your poison. If that woman wanna cut, then tell her I am Mr. Ointment. Tell her make an appointment with Mr. I can't make an appointment. Take my lollipop and enjoy it. Remake one of the bottles in the club. That's Lil Wayne with Lollipop. Lil Wayne is the self-professed greatest rapper alive. He could also be the ugliest and also the most tattooed. Despite not releasing a physical album in 3 years, the New Orleans rhymer has maintained an unrelenting schedule of digital releases in the form of tracks and mixtapes, almost all of which have been given away for free. That said, Vakarta 3, his sixth solo album, is, after much waiting, scheduled for release this summer, and Lollipop is taken from it. Rosie Swash, did you get a free complimentary lollipop in the post?
No.
I did. It's quite exciting.
I really like this song. He's been around for ages. I think he was signed when he was like 14 or something, and he was on that Juvenile track, Back That Airs Up. He is huge in America right now. Mm. And this single is huge too, which I think sounds fantastic. It pushes his vocals right to the front. It's a sort of synthetic-y sounding track in its entirety, and so you're listening to what he has to say a lot more. And I love his voice. It's kind of ravaged but also totally juvenile at the same time.
Dorian, what do you make of the production on this track?
Well, the production suits his voice fantastically. I mean, even though he has done lots of guest spots, his voice doesn't suit every kind of beat, and this just has this wonderful sort of slushy, sludgy, smeary feel, which his voice has. And you know, the thing that I love about Lil Wayne is that he's addicted to the codeine in cough syrup, which is partly because he also has to have lots of coughs and chest infections and stuff. And so in his voice, you kind of hear this constantly, like, whacked out, slithery quality. And the way that he goes, appointment, ointment, you know, and really just sort of fantastically unhurried.
I've always wondered about him and his claim to be the greatest rapper alive, because he does do a lot of that, not so much rhyming as reiterating the same word again and again with a slightly different pronunciation. Is that enough to claim the title nowadays?
When boys who like hip-hop sit down and have discussions about the greatest rapper, people will say someone like Rakim. But then you've got people like sort of Snoop or Method Man, where it's just the voice, you know, and you can't underestimate just the pleasure, like the grain of a voice. And it's just the way that he wraps his tongue around the words, and on a kind of basic speed of rhymes or cleverness of internal rhyming, there's loads of people leave him for dead.
But he just sounds like... Or even the imagery, he isn't particularly strong on that either, is he?
Not in this particular one, although the lollipop, I do think, symbolises something other than the lollipop in this one.
Why do you think he's so popular, Rosie? Because, see, 7.4 million impressions on YouTube for this video.
I think it was similar to what Dorian was saying. You can't underestimate the fact that he doesn't sound like anybody else, and it's a weird voice. And someone like Nas, who is totally the opposite kind of rapper, is quite boring to listen to nowadays with what he's making. Listen to the melody in that chorus. It's like a nursery rhyme. It's simple, and yet it's got a lot of imagination behind it. You can't underestimate how even the general public and all their stupidity are going to really like that. Buy it.
Contentious statement. Okay, that's another track that's coming out on June the 2nd. It's Lollipop. It's by Lil Wayne. On the blog last week, you were so busy rowing about the credentials of Spiritualize that there was only time for a couple of posts about the singles we reviewed. Martin Cooling was talking about Black Mountain. He says, although I do like the Black Mountain track, I feel it may be a flash in the pan. Didn't Wolfmother attempt the very same retro rock thing about 2.5 years ago? Look what happened to them. Actually, I don't know what happened to them. What are Wolfmother up to nowadays? Well, Martin Cooling, glad to help on this one. I can tell you that Wolfmother recently played their first gig in 9 months at Brisbane's Gallery of Modern Art. They apparently played 4 new songs during their set, and the artistic community of Brisbane were apparently impressed. At least, that's what he told his wife when he got home. EJD offered up his opinion on quite what the Wu-Tang Clan meant by their interpolation of While My Guitar Gently Weeps. I think an interpolation is a way of not saying sample, EJD writes, by either playing live whatever bit you intended to sample, or even playing it and changing it by half a note or something. The fact that it's Darnie Harrison playing the guitar instead of a sample form of the recording of While My Guitar Gently Weeps makes it an interpolation. I think this clever practice was invented by De La Soul, but I'm not sure. As a longtime fan of Wu-Tang Clan, I too am disappointed in that song. It's got not much going for it, apart from the sample/interpolation. It needs better drums, a bit more oomph maybe, and that little touch of darkness that RZA can bring to a song. Remember, you can contribute to the Singles Club each week by posting your thoughts on the tracks we review on our blog at blogs.guardian.co.uk/music. You can rave or fume about any of the tracks we've reviewed already, but also these other numbers that are also out to buy on June the 2nd. Elbow, One Day Like This. It's looking like a beautiful day. Pin Me Down, Cryptic. Igloo and Hartley, Violent and Young. You bang your head against the wall. Moethe, All You Need Is Me. Yet you remain
'cause all you need is me.
Okie dokie, that is their montage there. Thank you very much, Dorian, for coming in and joining us on Singles Club today.
Cheers.
How's everything going with the book? Is it moving along a pace?
As much of a pace as a book moves. Slowly.
So it just sits on the desk and slowly yeah, creeps towards
the
edge.
Looking accusingly at me.
I'm just wondering, has anybody written, you know, you're doing this about, your book's about protest music. Has anybody written a fuel protest song yet? Anybody written anything about the hike in the fuel tax or...
You see, money-hungry protest songs, never good.
No.
Tax man. Songs about taxes, not pretty.
No. It just makes you sound a little bit bitter, doesn't it? Thanks again, Dorian. And as we move on, do remember that you can read Rosie's text version of The Singles Club with extra tracks for your consideration each week at guardian.co.uk/music. And you can also watch the videos too.
On the latest Film Weekly.
Going into it, I thought there's a lot of ways I could fail at this. So I prepared as hard as I possibly could and I worked as hard as I possibly could.
Yes, we talked to Ben Affleck about stepping behind the camera for the first time to direct Gone Baby Gone. Also, we'll be discussing the Palme d'Or winning film Entre les Murs and talking to Peter Biskind, American writer and critic, about the rise of independent cinema. All that on Film Weekly with me, Jason Solomon.
Time for our second guest this week, and that's Andy Burrows. In his day job, he's drummer for million-selling Burrell-fueled outfit Razorlight, but by night, he's been recording an album of acoustic tracks in order to support a children's hospital.
Why can't we have bigger and better mud flats? Tangled in the woodlands, puddles in my pond. I like losing my way and not being able to find things. Why can't I look for books on the wrong shelf? Chalk my own hopscotch, tip the wrong box, and sing the wrong tune. And sing the wrong tune.
Okay, that is Boxes by Andy Burrows. Now, Rosie, yeah, you spoke to Andy Burrows this week. Did we just use him in order to ask him awkward questions about Razorlight?
Not solely.
No.
We too support charities, you know, in the sense that we allow people to talk about them on the podcast.
We've never actually dipped our hands in our own pockets, have we? Let's face it. Sugar comes up to us. Borderline physical assault.
He did this album for Naomi House, which is a hospice for terminally ill children, which he knew about because it's near where he grew up, which also coincides with the album because he wrote the music to the album to the poetry of his neighbour, Peter Dixon. So he decided to put the poetry to music and he put this little album together. He thought it would be great to sell it and give the proceeds to Naomi House, and he called it The Colour of My Dreams. So of course I started by asking him what colour his dreams are.
But on the sleeve it's pink, which is worrying.
Why?
Why is it worrying or why is it pink?
Both.
It's pink because I thought it went well with black and I was only allowed one colour because it's a tight budget, and it's worrying that it's pink. My favourite colour is blue, but I don't think it went so well with black.
There's lots of different things that I want to talk to you about the album that are quite interesting.
Right.
One is, I wasn't expecting it to sound the way it sounds.
Quite so bad and...
No, I think it's lovely. No, yeah. No, I kind of thought, right, you know, this guy's, it's his debut solo record. He's going to have put loads of production in it. And it almost reminds me of John Martin, very Beatles-esque.
I suppose it's totally the opposite to sort of what I do for my day job. A lot of
in a band
on the drums.
Called Razorlight.
Yeah, yeah. Plus it was done at home, you know. And this was my kind of first venture trying to record something on my own. And so I suppose it's just a reflection of my simplistic computer skills. I was just doing it because I was a bit bored. And then I thought, you know, maybe I could do something for this charity that I'd been associated with for the last couple of years.
And that is Jack's House?
Jack's Place. Part of, basically, Naomi House is like a hospice for terminally ill children. Each family gets sort of like a few weeks per year that they can use the facilities. And Jack's Place is basically a new project, a place that's going to be built for older kids because they want to be able to take their girlfriends, boyfriends and stuff. They want to be able to take them there and like be cool and like hang out. And they want a cinema and they want a bar and just do stuff that other kids their age, you know, without the illnesses could do.
Winter, winter, hear the roar. Bangs our window, bangs our door. Bites our fingers, bites our toes. Nips our ears, nips our nose. Horrid winter, dreadful jaws. Coughs and sniffles, spits and roars. We hate winter, go away. Except perhaps on Christmas Day.
you know, I don't think this album is going to be, you know, up there with Thriller in terms of records, but I'd rather get criticised for trying to help a charity than
ignored for not.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's, at the end of the day, those kind of criticisms, those kind of comments are totally understandable.
It's very gracious of you.
No, but they are, though, aren't they? Of course they are. I mean, it's like, how can you ever know if somebody's doing something to try and make themselves look amazing or whether they're doing it for the right reasons? But at the end of the day, if they're actually doing something, then quite frankly, it doesn't really matter.
Or they could just see Andy Burrow's solo album, he's leaving Razorlight.
They could see that. I mean, it would be a pretty... I mean, I'd like to think that if I was going to make an album on my own, I might try a little bit harder and maybe record it in a proper studio.
So just to be clear, you're not leaving Razorlight.
No, definitely not. No way. Drums are home.
How are things going in your other band?
Really, really good.
So you're recording it next
at the moment? Well, we start like next week. We've been writing it and rehearsing it in a studio up in Finsbury Park for the last 2 months, and we start recording it in about a week. It's sounding rather epic at the moment, but yeah, no, we're all really, really excited.
But it doesn't sit with some of the press that Razorlight get for being a band that all hate each other, or more specifically, hate
me.
No, not you. You're like known as the nicest man in the music industry.
Well,
in juxtaposition to your frontman,
who's a real pop star. To be fair to him, you know, he's a lovely guy. He's a dear friend of mine. So
it's not true. You don't all hate him and hate each
no
other.
At all. No, I mean, I just think that, yeah, I don't know. I just, in any job, there are pressures, you know, with other workmates and stuff. But generally, you get to go home at the end of the day, or get to go home on the weekend. I mean, I'm not. This isn't like, isn't it so hard for us? Because it's not. But you do spend an unnatural amount of time with each other, and a lot of the time you're on tour in a bus. Granted, those buses have lounges and they're lovely. And if you have a row with somebody, you're like a foot away from them. And if you get out and go for a wee, you're going to see them.
All this came out because that people were writing that he had stolen America from you, that you wrote it all, that it was your song, and you demanded his name.
No, not at all. Different songs start at different places, that's all. I think it just so happened that the chorus or some line of that song, I think, you know, I mean, he's written a million songs that, you know, he's started and we've finished together. You know, he certainly writes the bulk of the songs for us. Like, it just so happens that a couple of the big hits on the last record, me and him wrote together. I suppose because of whatever the reputation he has is, you know, maybe it looked interesting to the outside world that they're written with someone else. And they're very much co-writes, but the songs have to start somewhere. And I think probably that just came from the fact that I think America just happened to be like a melody that I was humming first. Mm. And then, you know, but a song isn't a song until it's sort of finished. And you know, that was very, very much a half and half effort.
You said just before, oh, I'm happy being a drummer. But you've been hiding a really lovely voice, I have to say. Well, it's a very nice singing voice.
That's very kind of you. I think it's very nasally and irritating. I really like singing backing vocals. And I love singing harmonies. I've always found that very easy. A lot of lead vocalists sometimes find it a little harder to, you know, they're very much concentrating on the main melody, whereas I've always found it very easy to kind of flit around. And God, I'm getting a bit muso here, but thank you for your kind words about my voice. I think it's all right. I'm definitely a better drummer than singer.
That's Andy Burrows, and The Colour of My Dreams is out now.
A very modest young man, is he not? You can also donate to the Jack's Place Appeal via naomihouse.org.uk, and that's naomihouse.org.uk. Right, before we leave this here pod, let's try and work out what happened on the blog last week. There was certainly a lot of critical debate on the merits or otherwise of last week's guest Spiritualized. I can tell you that for nothing. I think Alex Needham started it, our colleague, posting nostalgically that I remember listening to Spiritualized's first album on the night I got my A-level results. Would it be uncharitable to say they haven't changed their sound since? It's almost like he was deliberately trying to provoke debate there, and it was kind of a signal to open the floodgates. Nothing True wrote, I saw Spiritualized on Jules Holland recently, and they were dull, dull, dull. Check out Wooden Ships. Wooden Ships? Wooden Shipes? it's S-H-J-I-P-S. I've heard about them. I haven't really heard the music, Rosie. Shipe, Ships, what would you do?
I'm not going to... Shite? No,
you're not going to say that. Wooden Ships. Now there is a band that keeps the Spaceman 3 spirit alive. Then Kessler 44 dropped in and he delivered the coup de grace. Jason Pierce's work, he wrote, in inverted commas, is the equivalent of a monkey wanking and defecating onto a blank canvas after a 10 burrito dinner. A lot of substance, not the prettiest end product. We kind of decided that whether it was appropriate or not, it was so colourful that it had to be repeated this week. There were some demurring voices. This charming Mark enjoyed Pierce's recent musical, ejaculations, and Bugsy23 chipped in. No, this charming Mark, you are not alone. I love the new single, and it blew me away live at Coco on Tuesday as well, as did the rest of the gig. As soon as that issue was resolved, JG Llewellyn arrived to take offence at Rosie's questioning technique. Somebody called Barry Glendenning a tool, and Cynical Tone posted something entirely random about cats and bike clips, all of which left Frisky Dingo a little bewildered. Geez, he wrote, I go away on holiday for a few weeks and they've moved the pod from Thursday to Friday. People are talking about monkey wanking and everyone is picking on Paul, which they weren't, I promise you. What happened? Whatever it was, I'm sure it's Rosie's fault.
It always is.
Isn't it? I wholeheartedly concur with those opinions,
Story of
Frisky.
My life.
Thanks a lot for that. So that was the blog. It was a hectic one, but we loved it, and we'd really like to see something similar again. So please do come to blogs.guardian.co.uk/music once you've listened to the show and post your thoughts on matters therein. No time left to do your Facebook friends this week, but we do have a lot of them, so thank you very much again, and we love you all. We're back next Friday. Register now to get the podcast sent straight to your computer or MP3 player for free. You can find out how at guardian.co.uk/music. You can find out how on the blog. Subscribe. It means we appear briefly on the iTunes charts and it all makes us feel a lot better about ourselves. That's all for this week. Thank you very much, Rosie.
Thanks.
Thanks again to Dorian. See you later.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.